Welcome back to the Cadet Conversations and Coffee Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Collison. This week on the podcast, I have high school vocal instructor Brandon Waring to talk about how growing up in a small town allowed him to be a part of all the activities he wanted to be a part of. And I got to apologize. It's been a while since we actually recorded this episode. I got real busy with some other stuff. It's not an excuse, but just letting you know that we actually recorded this episode about a month ago. And now I'm going to publish it right when the musical is about to go live. And he talks a lot about the High School Musical that's in production right now. So if you get a chance, go see the musical. Brandon has done a great job getting his cast ready for this musical. And, you know, they've been dealing with navigating the pandemic and quarantines and all that. It's pretty unique. So if you do get to see the musical or get a chance to go up and talk with Brandon, tell him about all the good work he's doing here at Iowa Falls Alden High School. I hope you like the episode and enjoy what you hear. Welcome back to the Cadet Conversations and Coffee Podcast. I'm here today with high school vocal instructor Brandon Waring. Brandon, how you doing?
I'm good. How about yourself, Michael?
I'm doing great. You know, we are in the midst of what my former college basketball coach called the February blues, mm-hmm. but I'm not feeling blue at all. So
yeah, it's
been pretty awesome. So Brandon, tell me a little bit about where you grew up and tell me about your family.
Yeah. So I grew up about a half hour north of Cedar Rapids in a small town called Walker, Iowa. I grew out on a farm just between two small towns and went to a small 1A school district. So I have three siblings. Oldest is a brother and then two sisters, and I'm the youngest and my two parents as well.
I'm the youngest too. It's awesome.
We're the favorites,
we're
right?
The favorites,
obviously.
For sure.
I mean, there was never any doubt in my mind that I was the favorite. Actually, what really, if we're being honest, we probably both watched our siblings go through and do stupid stuff or get punished, or you kind of learned how to work the system by the time it got to you. Is that kind of how it was for you as well?
Definitely. And I can also remember too, feeling like my brother or my sister were the favorite. And then as I got older, they were like able to point out all the reasons. No, you got to do this, Michael. You got to do that. My sister uses this example all the time. She had to wait until her 13th birthday to rent Dirty Dancing because it was PG-13. And my mom was, no, you will not rent it until you're 13. And she watched it like seven straight times. And then I got to go to the Austin Powers movie by myself at like 9 years old.
I love it.
And so she's always like, just look at what you got to do versus what I got to do. And then I knew being the youngest means you're the one, at least who's allowed to do more. So,
yeah. The first kid, they're all like, oh, this is the first one. We're making sure they go right. And then second, it loosens up. And by the time it gets to us, it's just really like, yeah, we know how to do this. You're not going to be a train wreck.
Yeah, definitely. So you said you grew up on a farm. What kind of stuff, you know, I grew up in the city, as I would say, in a small town. Mm-hmm. But what was it like growing up on a farm? You know, what kind of stuff did you learn there? And was that ever something you considered doing?
Yeah, so it definitely was a lot of learning experience of things that I can do now just because I worked with my dad and my grandpa. I have a large extended family that all lives, and we kind of all farm together. Mm-hmm. We all have our separate land. But we all share equipment and stuff. And so I would go up in the summers, especially, and work with grandpa. Or I was, when I was younger, out with dad and whatnot. And dad actually has he works as a IT person for a company. So mm-hmm. farming, we are hobby farmers, we call it. So we have corn and soybeans for 160 acres only, and then a couple, 5 or 6 head of cattle to mm-hmm. raise for meat. But there are so many, I mean, just discipline, work ethic of making sure that you knew that there's things that need to be taken care of, and you just got to do it. No one else is going to do it for you. And part of I was involved in FFA and ag, mm-hmm. and awesome that we have such a great program here at Iowa Falls for that as well. But I raised two calves, that were twins. Mm-hmm. And so I bought bought them and raised them. And
so you
that
bought them
was
when they were young,
before they were born. I actually bought the mom and then ended it. Didn't know it was going to be twins. Kind of got double my money. It was awesome. So then raised them and sold them off for me. So it was that just cool. A lot of learning experience of things where if I, you know, something happens where just the other last week, a student's car was dead and I knew how to jump it. Like, sure, there was no question in my mind. And some of those skills that maybe, not saying that you city folk don't get.
No, I don't know how to do any of that stuff. So that's good.
Well, it's cool that I can teach that to the students as well, yeah, as these other things, or even working on building a musical set, which we'll talk about musicals later, I'm sure, as, yeah, I know you're a big fan, but you know, teaching a kid how to use a hammer, or, yeah, and they get that with, if they take one of the shop classes with Mr. Seidel, but some of them, if they don't or too afraid to, like, it's just a good learning experience. So I'm glad I got that opportunity. Did you ever have like any family on the farm or get to be experienced at all?
My mom's mom remarried after her husband died. So my grandpa Peterson, I never met him. He died when my mom was 19. But she remarried a farmer. And so I actually did spend some time on a farm. Yep. Now, I liked, you know, riding in the tractor, yep, way more than anything else. And but I did learn a little bit from that. But you bringing up the point about, you know, working on a musical set, it reminds me, we went to West Des Moines Valley and played a basketball game there. And their AD actually gave us a big tour of their fine arts wing. And, mm-hmm, they actually had a separate shop that was,
oh, yeah,
devoted to the productions that they put on. And I think that is cool. It's a cool thing that it could be potential collaboration between, mm-hmm, the activities that you're involved in, being not only, you know, a vocal instructor, but also the musical director, mm-hmm, you know, and Mr. Seidel's industrial tech classes. I think that's one of the cool things about, you know, being in a school this size, is you can work together with those teachers.
Yeah, for sure. And some of the students too are, I mean, I have students involved in the musical process that aren't in choir. And I think, yep, that's as an extracurricular, the same with basketball. I mean, it's not tied to a class where they have to be in sports class to do basketball or whatnot. I think it's cool, because then I have students who have taken some of Mr. Seidel's classes, like, yeah, I'd love to help build some of this stuff. So, yeah, and it's cool to give the students those opportunities to create something and have that ownership, you know, where they might not get that if they're not inclined in some of those other activities.
Yeah. And we talk about school pride all the time. You know, you can't have more pride than saying I helped other students, you know, yep, and help them with something that they really have put in a lot of time working on, you know. And I used to be involved in not the musicals, but the spring play. I know how much work that is. And then to have other students contribute to that work, that's cool to have our, yep, students help each other out.
Yeah. And in high school, I did athletics. I did speech.
You did it all.
I think the only thing that I was not involved in was FBLA, the Future Business Leaders of America. I think that's the only club, yeah, that I did not have my hands in. And this, it's just so different from all the activities. I mean, some of those students that are in sports, like, there's just this different feel, because you guys have two games a week, yeah, or you have three, or you have a tournament where, you know, for musical and play, you get this, there's two performances. Yep. And so it's like, there's that much more pressure, but there's that much more excitement. So, sure, if you get to that night and I built that set, or I'm the one up on the stage, like, there's just this extra, like, high that comes from it, almost. Like, you know, you get the adrenaline from a basketball game. I'm sure you experience that all the time.
But I will say, like, also being in the spring plays, it's pretty comparable. Like when we would play, you know, a conference rival, you know, it was kind of like always in the back of your mind, like, yeah, we're playing this week, but in 2 weeks we're playing Webster City, you, yep, know, like, that's a big game. And so, you know, the feeling that I would have being on the court was similar a lot of times to that feeling, yep, being on the stage. And, you know, it was, you know, you hit a big shot or you dunk or something and the crowd goes crazy. But then in the spring play, it might be you say a line and it's a funny line and it hits and the crowd laughs. So, yeah, you're just like, I feel good. You know, it feels
exactly
great.
Exactly.
So I think, you know, this kind of leads into my next question. You already started to allude to this. Being involved in so many things as a student probably contributed to you becoming a teacher. So what did you like and dislike about being a student back in the day?
I love learning. I mean, I just have always, from when the time I was young, I love reading. I love books. I'm a bookworm. So I've loved learning. So school was really easy for me. So I was able to be involved in all those different things. I love the participation. I love the leadership and independence. And as the youngest child, you know, maybe you can relate. The parents were like, oh, my baby. And they didn't want to.
Just a few times.
Yeah, just a few times. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So getting that independence and, yeah, being able to kind of, hey, this is something that I'm doing, was really cool. And especially that's, I think, what geared me more towards music, was that my three siblings are awesome rock star athletes. And, uh-huh, and I, I love playing sports, but I will never be as athletically inclined as my brothers and sisters. And that's okay. So like, this was something that was like mine, like, you know, they all three hit like a last second shot. My brother for the conference, the last game to decide the conference, I think, or something like that. And my sister was, they did like a rival in like the U.S. Cellular Center in Cedar Rapids. So they did those things, and they both, and so there was all kind of, and I'm like, well, they hit the last shot, but I hit the high note. So that was kind of my comparison.
As a younger brother of an NBA player, you're preaching to the choir. And I think when I was younger, so people all know about my brother, but my sister was a great athlete too. She was all conference and all state and like three or four different sports. And you know, she's a four sport athlete. And so when I was younger, I actually think I gravitated towards things like being in the play and speech, because it was different. It was something they never did. And I felt a lot of pride in that, but then it allowed me too, to gain some confidence, because, you know, like my brother, you know, a lot of people know Nick and, but he's pretty quiet, you know, he's a little bit, you know, more introverted than I am. So it was kind of like my way of gaining some confidence. And then it allowed me to really enjoy basketball too. And so, you know, I see so many comparisons in what you're describing for your, you know, youth and your experience and my own. And, you know, and I think when you think about high school, what it really, it's a place to learn, and it's a place to, you know, obviously get you prepared for the next step, but it's also a place to find out a little bit more about yourself.
For sure.
And it sounds like you were able to do that at Northland.
Yeah. And I think, and that's what I encourage. I mean, I want every kid to be playing basketball, football, and I want them to be in the musical and band, and I want them to do speech and FFA, because I think that there are things that I learned from each one of those that shaped me into who I am now.
Yeah.
And I think too, that there's different skills that come along with each one of those that equipped you for the future.
Yeah.
And I think you know, we could go off on this, but I think we're depriving our kids of that ability by specializing in one thing. Like there's only, you know, so many people that go on to the pros, but if you look at those pros, how many of them were involved in different sports? You look at, you know, even I think of some of the Iowa State, I'm a big Iowa State fan. Sure. So some of the Iowa State football, you know, people who are just killing it right now and are on the top of their game were also stud basketball players.
Yeah.
Some of them were in the band. Some of them were in quite, like, it's that well-roundedness that colleges are looking for, and that really prepares you for life. And I know as I've learned more about you and your program, like, you're a big on teaching the kids more about preparing them for life and not just basketball. So I think maybe you agree on that one.
Oh, 100%. And obviously the example that lots of coaches bring up is multiple sport athletes. And I think we do a great job of encouraging our kids to do that. But I also think too, multiple activity athletes. You know, we've got some kids, like one of our basketball players, Sam Weaver, is incredibly talented as a musician. Mm-hmm. And if you only see him do his thing on Tuesday and Friday nights, you're missing out, because go to a band concert, watch that kid play the piano, because he is phenomenal. And you know, I think that the more we can encourage kids to do that and find out what's their niche, what's their thing, it also gives them something to embrace and feel confident in it. And I just think that's cool that we're trying to do that. You know, I always tell, every year I go down, and obviously this year I didn't because our band hasn't been able to play at our basketball games, but every year I go to the band room before our season and I go talk to them and say, you guys, we need you at the games. Like, we do. Like, I love when we're warming up for a game and we got the band rolling and the crowd is into it, and then they play Seven Nation Army right before the game tips off. It pumps me up. So we just got to keep doing that. But let me go back to, you know, you talked about being at Northland and being involved. Well, when did you know you wanted to be a teacher?
Yeah. So I, my whole life kind of growing up, I was going to be a lawyer. But a good portion of it, I just was on that path, going to be a lawyer and then be a politician. I wanted to go into that route. And it was actually the January of my senior year, the end of January, that I was like, you know what? I want to be a music teacher.
Yeah.
And I think there was a couple of parts to it, but I had awesome music teachers who had made a difference in my life. And I think you, as a coach, you kind of get that. You get extra time with the kids where we get to develop those relationships because we have concerts, because we have basketball games, we have outside practices. More time just allows you to have a bigger impact on the students. And so I had teachers that definitely made an impact on me, and I wanted to do that for other students as well. So it was actually kind of funny. I think back on that time because we had 2 weeks. You have to audition to get into music programs at colleges. Yep. And so I had decided.
I did not know that. You can't just go be in,
nope,
in the music program.
Okay. No. So it's kind of like you're applying for med school or applying for law school or anything. You have to audition to get into a music program. So wow. I decided 2 weeks before the auditions to change my major, but Iowa State was always the place I was going to go. That was no doubt. So we had a 2 weeks of my band teacher and choir teacher. We were just practicing nonstop for that audition. But and Mr. Schmidt, of course, was one of my. He was my junior year band director. I don't know if
I knew that. Yeah. I was going to ask how you got to IFA, and I'm sure he was probably part of the influence there. At least what drew you here a little bit. Yes,
for sure. And so. I actually started teaching band for 2.5 years because the long-term sub position at the school I graduated from, North Lynn, opened up, and then they put me on contract. So I learned a lot, and I loved being in the community I grew up in. And I think that music was something for me that was a challenge, and I liked that challenge.
Yeah.
And it was something, you know, school was easy for me, and
sure.
It wasn't like it really pushed me a lot. So music did. I mean, it was, Mr. Schmidt was kind of the one who got me back into band, which allowed me to keep on this path. And then he kind of contacted me saying, hey, I have a choir position opening up, the person's retiring. And it was kind of been working on me for a couple of years before he pulled me, and then I came up for an interview, and administration was awesome.
Yep.
The community seemed super supportive from what I'd seen in the band program. And of course, getting to work with Jeff every day was going to be a big plus, and we have a lot of fun. So really, really grateful for that.
I was just talking about this with on a conversation with Mr. Newman about the bond issue that's being voted on. And part of that's for some fine arts additions. And I actually kind of gushed over our music and our vocal program. Like, you guys just do such a great job, and kids are getting excited. And I recently have a student teacher, and I've reached out to her advisor, and I just basically told him, hey, if you ever need students for band student teaching or vocal student teaching, I said, you really need to look at Iowa Falls Alden, because quite frankly, our teachers are phenomenal. And I said, I'm just being honest, band is the thing to do. Like,
yeah.
Like kids are involved in band and choir and music, and it's a really cool thing. So send them our way. And I think that's a credit to the programs that you guys are building. It's awesome.
And I think too that, you know, it's just part of being in a community where it's encouraged. You know, we talked about doing multi activities, but even just to support a community of, we want these programs. I mean, Jeff has done awesome things here, and credit to also Ross and Harvey and Mike Molman and everybody on the music, because it's not just a one-time thing, but they get to hear it, and he just is such an awesome teacher, and he's going to be the first to get humble and not,
sure,
not be in the limelight. But I mean, the connections that he builds with students, and he's, you know, just as much a counselor, mentor,
yeah,
leader to the students as he is a band director. And I think that's what makes his program special, and hopefully something that we'll keep rolling and get going into the music vocal department as well.
Absolutely. So. I'm very confident it will, especially with a guy like you here, who's by what I could tell, doing a phenomenal job.
Well, thank you.
So let's get away from school a little bit.
Okay.
What do you like to do with your free time now? And I know one thing you like to do, because one day I was up here for grad school, and it's like 9 o'clock at night, and I'm walking the halls, and I see this dude just pumping iron in the weight room at 9 at night. And I go in there, I'm like, Brandon, what are you doing? And you're like, oh, I love to work out at night. So I know that's one thing.
Well, yeah. Okay. Let's not be too pumping iron. I mean, we don't have to talk about the quantity of iron. I'm sure I was pumping, you know,
I got three plates.
Yeah.
I saw three plates on either side.
All 2.5 of those were just absolutely great. No. That I do have gotten in the last year, and I haven't as much with musical season, but it was almost for a couple of months, it was a nightly routine. Mr. Uhlenhop and I were actually just in there, you know, pretty much every night. We got to see each other.
And you lift as much weight as Mr. Uhlenhop, don't you?
Yeah, no, there was one time, the first time that I think we were kind of working out, and I mean, that guy's just jacked.
Yep.
I mean, you just
he
look
puts
at
in
him.
A lot of time.
He puts a lot of time, and he is definitely done a lot of work with being a college athlete as well. So he was warming up, and I remember thinking, like, oh yeah, like I could get that weight. Like, that's not bad. And then I realized that was just his like stretching warm up plate as I, and so then he keeps putting on like, yeah, never mind. That's about three times of what I'm about to lift. So it's all right. We're in different journeys, different points in our journeys.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So did you guys lift weights much when you were in high school? Was that a big thing?
Well, it was a big thing here, but admittingly it was not big for me.
Yeah.
I grew really late. So I was never strong growing up. And I think the weight room was very intimidating to me. And, you know, I think I went in there a few times and some of the older guys made a couple comments that I couldn't lift the weight. And I got embarrassed when I should have been like, you know what, this place is about just improvement.
Yeah.
What I will say now is I feel like the culture with our kids is really great. Like they're accepting of all the kids at different spots. Because when you said that you and Mr. Uhlenhop were in different journeys, I was at a totally different journey than mm-hmm. some of the other kids. And it wasn't until I got to college that I really bought into the weight room. Because when I was playing basketball, you know, I was 18 years old and I was going against 22, 23 year old men. And yeah. I was like, if I don't lift, I'm going to never do anything here.
Yeah.
So, but it's been a big part of what kids have done here. And so I think it really needs to be just a place of growth and improvement and not necessarily a place of who can lift the most. Because we're all different in that regard.
And I think, too, that's kind of, you know, going back to so many of the things we talked about, siblings of comparing.
Yeah.
That's just like a disease that our culture with social media.
Comparison is the thief of joy.
It really is. Yeah. And we do some choir interviews to get to know the different choir members. And one question I've had recently is, what would be better in your life without cell phones? And it's been kind of cool to see how honest they've been about, I'd be more confident, or
sure.
I would be less self-conscious, or I compare myself less, because it's terrible. And I think the weight room is like the ultimate epitome of that, because if you're comparing yourself, like, good grief, there's always going to be somebody who's lifting heavier than you. Like,
I can specifically remember there was I was a sophomore and I grew that year. So I was like 6'7" and I was, you know, long arms,
yep.
skinny. And there was this kid in there who was like 5'7". And he was bench pressing and he was putting up so much weight. I was like, I'm not strong. I can't lift that much. Well, yeah. Cause my wingspan is,
yeah,
you know, 7 feet long and his is 5 feet, you know? And
mm-hmm.
he was just, it's a different thing. I wasn't built for that place,
nope.
you know? And so I was comparing myself to him when really I should have been like, you know, I just need to be in here for me and
yep.
compare myself to what I was last week, you know, or like try to get growth. And I'm glad it finally hit for me at some point, but I always tell that to kids now, you know, especially when we've got kids who are in a similar situation.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you're exactly right. The weight room, you could go in there and I mean, right now I could go in there and 7 of my basketball players would be able to lift more than me
yeah.
almost every yeah. bench press. And I know that for a fact.
And I think that's kind of the whole mentality that I started to switch and approach things with. Cause I mean, before, you know, even for music, if you're looking at anything that you do in life, like if you're comparing yourself to other people, like we have a lot of people that are very self-conscious about their voice
yeah.
because, oh, well, I hear this person singing. It's like, well, you know, that person has also had voice lessons for 5 years
yeah.
and that person is trained singer and they are at a different point. If you just work on getting better, then you know what, one day at a time, you're going to get to where you need to go.
And
so.
I bet one challenge too, and this is true in athletics and in other fields too. Some people just also have God-given talent.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I still think that teaching kids that, hey, they may have this God-given talent, you may not, but that doesn't mean you can't have a great experience.
Or like, that you're any worth any less
yes,
than that person.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, like do your thing, like still
yeah.
go out there and sing, you know? And I think that the message that you have for your vocal students is so good in that regard.
And you have to identify like, yeah, you maybe not bench press as much, but can that guy dunk? I mean, you know what I mean? There's
yeah,
different, like
exactly.
everybody has
yeah.
their unique skill set that you have to capitalize. And that's one thing my college professor always is like, eventually everybody can sing, everybody can play basketball at a high level. But what do you have that makes you different than them? So
yeah.
it's like, you're comparing yourself and try to be them, but really you need to focus on, okay, well, what can I do different than them
sure.
and make that my thing,
yeah.
you know? So
definitely.
Besides that,
like, yeah, the question was, what do
yeah,
you like
know,
to do in your free time?
We're getting some very good philosophical
yes,
talking here.
Are.
That's good.
We should write a book, make millions
yes.
of dollars, and retire from
teaching. You should have like some culture or comparison. Like, I mean, we could have a lot of good material.
There
but,
you go.
Besides here and there, getting in the weight room, I love reading, as I kind of mentioned. So, and I try not to do too much during the school year, because if I pick up a book, then I'm glued to it until its completion. But I also love playing, you know, I love playing sports. We'll play pickup games once a year. My whole family gets together on New Year's Day, and the whole extended family, all like 40 of us, are in at the gym playing basketball.
You actually challenged some of our basketball players to one-on-one.
I'm still waiting for it.
No one accepted your challenge.
No one did. I think I just need to show up at a practice one day and just kind of.
We'll take you.
Yeah.
And I also will say, I think your challenge was, if I beat you, you have to come out for choir. And then some of them were like, oh.
I don't want to take that risk. They were scared. Hey, you know what? That's all right.
No, maybe we'll get a few of them out there.
Okay.
You know, I'm supporting that because I would love to see more
I
guys
do. We just need to set that on the schedule. Like, he's coming this day, and then I'll just show up, and whoever wants to. We may have to limit, though, to like one or two games per session.
Well,
because
you're out of shape?
Because, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be in as good a shape as some of your guys that have been running for quite a while.
That's true.
Yeah.
So we had talked about a little earlier about, you know, you brought up musicals. And on my podcast, I always do this category called Mount Rushmore. And mm-hmm. if you've listened to the pod, then a Mount Rushmore list is a group of four of an all-time group of something. It doesn't necessarily mean a ranking, but it's a group of four of the best, most meaningful, whatever it may be, however you interpret it. And so I got to ask you, being a vocal instructor, you definitely have to have some knowledge of musicals. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've been to a few musicals in your day, one or two.
Yep.
You obviously are the musical director here, so you got a lot of experience there. So what is your Mount Rushmore of Broadway musicals?
Okay, but well, before I answer that, I know you're a big fan of musicals, so you have to, and you don't have to give me a four, but maybe what are a couple of your top ones that you know? Because you've self-proclaimed that you're a big musical fan, so I'm curious.
I anticipated you turning the question to me, and so I was thinking about this because I sent you the questions beforehand, and I said I know he's going to ask me. And people don't know that always about me, but I do love musicals. I really enjoy. Thanks, Mr. Schmidt. I really do enjoy. I enjoy listening to the different songs from musicals. I love to go see the performances live, and so I'm going to give you my Mount Rushmore.
Okay, I'm ready.
I'm going to be brief about it. And my last one, you're probably going to make fun of.
Of course, I would not.
My first two are they're the cliche ones. You know, they're the really popular ones, but I do just enjoy them so much. Hamilton, obviously, it was groundbreaking. It did something that we've never seen done before.
Okay, now you're going to judge me because I still have not seen Hamilton.
Oh, it's great. Do you have Disney Plus?
I do. And Schmidt and students and people have been bugging me. But I'm told it's one you have to sit down and really watch.
Yes.
And I haven't had the opportunity or the mindset to dig into that one. So
that's something that you're going to have to do over spring break if you got no plans.
Yes.
But it's great. Lin-Manuel Miranda just took this idea. He took this person in our country's history, Alexander Hamilton, who was probably a little bit misunderstood, and, you know, depicted him in a way that was so cool. And then the music's just fantastic. You know, the combination of hip hop with, you know, classical music and other Broadway tunes and things. It was great.
Yeah.
So that's my first one.
Okay.
My second one is the other really big, one of the other really popular ones over the last 20 years, Wicked. You know, for those who don't know, Wicked is the story of the Wicked Witch of the West from her perspective. Maybe the story you didn't hear in The Wizard of Oz.
There's a prequel part in too. So you get to learn like her and the Good Witch of the East or North, or which I can't remember which one it was.
Correct. And it's based on a novel, actually, that was written first. And the novel goes much deeper, and it's there's a lot that's not talked about necessarily in the musical, but it is such a good musical. It talks about things like struggling with identity, confidence, and it's just got a powerful message, and the music is very good too.
So did you see that in person?
I did go see it. I obviously didn't see the original Broadway cast. I was too young. It came out in like 2003, I think, but I've seen it three times. Twice in Iowa and then one actually in New York,
awesome.
Which was pretty cool. And Wicked's one of those musicals that like different actors that you've seen in movies and TV shows, they will make the rounds and try to perform in that musical because it's so popular.
Yeah, I saw that one on West End, which is the London version of Broadway. So it was actually the lead Elphaba.
Elphaba, yeah.
Yeah,
Elphaba,
was yeah. Was the the understudy who of the original.
That's awesome.
So she was just, I mean, absolutely killer. So good. It was awesome. And you're right. I mean, it's just such a big production that you'll see so many people who are wanting to give it their shot in that. So it's pretty cool.
And then you see some people who maybe were like, maybe you shouldn't have tried it. Like there's the camp counselor from the Disney movie Heavyweights was in the production. And I was like, maybe you shouldn't have. Maybe you should have stayed in your lane.
Yeah.
But no, that's a great one. My other one is Les Mis. It's about the French Revolution. It's about a man who gets a second chance at life, which I think is cool. And it's got really powerful music. And I've always really enjoyed that one. I've never seen that one done by I wouldn't say a true cast, but like professionals. But I did see a version at the Sioux City Community Theater.
Okay.
And it's some of the kids that I went to school with at Briarcliff and some of the continuing ed students I went to school with actually performed in it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And they asked us all to go. And, you know, I couldn't get any of my basketball teammates to go. They had no interest in musicals. But my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, I just told her, I said, I really want to go because here are these classmates of mine. And I'm an English major. So I had a lot of different students. Like there were no other English majors on my basketball team. So I just had a totally different experience, than they did. And I said, I've got all these classmates who they put in so much time to this. And like, this is stuff we talk about in class. I really want to go. And she came with me. It was awesome. It was so cool to see. Like they really did a good job. And then my last musical, this one you're gonna make fun of.
Okay.
Maybe you won't. I went to New York with a buddy a couple years ago. And 8 years ago now, one of my best friends, and he had always wanted to go to New York, and I had been there. And so we went, and he was like, I really want to go see a show of something. And I said, me too. Like, let's go do it. Like, we got to go. And I said, let's go to a musical. And he was like, I don't really want to go to a musical. And I said, well, let's go to this musical. I bet you'll think it's cool. It was the Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark musical. It had a short run because people like died.
That's what I was just going to say. Yeah. Like there's people that were killed during that production.
Yes. And people like, cause literally Peter Parker, Spider-Man is swinging around the venue. And it was cool. And the music was good. And if you're a comic book nerd, like I am, it was like, this is kind of fun and it's different. And so that was my other favorite musical.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I like it.
I talked longer than I wanted to.
You're good.
I want to hear your Mount Rushmore musicals.
Okay. So I have a couple of that are more like, I think Mount Rushmore's of the musical genre itself. And then some that are more for me. So I think that the big one is definitely a cliche one, but Oklahoma.
Yes.
I don't think people realize they just know the contemporary musical style, but Oklahoma was like the first one that was actually called like a book musical. Mm-hmm. So prior to that, a lot of the shows really just had a bunch of popular songs strung together with not really much of a plot.
Yeah.
But this is Oklahoma was one of the first one where not just the music or the dialogue, but the dance as well, all generated the storyline. Mm-hmm. And it was more about the story than it was. So that was kind of a Mount Rushmore of like, that kind of changed how everything for musicals. And I think it's just, I mean, it's a classic.
Like Oklahoma is a classic production. Like high schools have done Oklahoma.
Yep.
I can remember our high school doing it back when I was really young. And being, advertised and stuff. So, that's definitely one I would say that a lot of people would consider.
Well, it just was a popular, it's just a feeling of like, it's not a direct like patriotism type of thing, but it's just kind of like a proud, like, this is where I'm from, like Oklahoma, like it's in the middle of the, Midwest. It's just, so I think there's a lot of good things in that one. I like that. For the other kind of musical genre, Phantom of the Opera is just by Andrew Lloyd Webber. It was the longest running consecutive on Broadway. So it just another one that kind of just is changed the face of. That's where you get now. Les Mis has kind of taken on some of that because he kind of broke through that like huge production type of like super productions almost.
And see, I don't even know. Is that who wrote Les Mis?
No.
But that was probably inspired by Phantom of the Opera.
It was just the kind of the groundbreakers in some of the genres. And I'm sure there's probably musical nerds more than me that know more, and maybe I'm not even right. But that, from what I remember in talking about, so there's just some of the groundbreaking ones. But for me, the first musical I ever saw was a musical called 42nd Street. which was about basically a musical about putting on a musical. And it was in Chicago on a band and choir trip. And it was in this theater that was not an auditorium style. It was like a circle.
Yeah.
So the stage was in the center.
Cool.
And I mean, it was just, they didn't have really much set, but it was just fascinating how they were able to use the space. Like, I was just so enamored by everything that was happening, and the dancing and the singing was amazing. So that was on Chicago Theater. And so that kind of holds a special place for me of like, that was like my first musical. Yeah. So I still think
of probably,
that.
It was probably like, for you, you know, as being a musical director now, and obviously it's a big part of your life, that passion area, it's like before that moment and after that moment. Mm-hmm. You know, you saw that and you were like, this is cool. I want to help with this. I want to help people do this or do it yourself. You know, it's cool.
Yeah. And then my, the last of my Mount Rushmore musicals is a musical called Guys and Dolls. And this one is pretty well known.
I've seen Guys and Dolls actually.
Yeah. Did you,
I saw a high school production. I saw my cousin do it. Yeah.
That's what it was. My senior year musical.
What's the main character's name? The male lead.
Sky Masterson.
That was my cousin Nate was Sky Masterson.
And I was Sky Masterson as well. But it was also something where it was my senior year. So unofficially I was kind of the assistant director.
Sure.
So I was the lead in the musical, but I also was the guy who knew how to run the sound system. So I was doing all that. And I kind of built the set. Mm-hmm. Like just kind of, so I kind of did like the whole musical was my baby.
Yeah, and it took a lot of pride in that.
And I have no fear admitting that I was like at the end of that, I was just bawling because it was my senior year musical. And it was just this thing that like, this just powerful experience that I had been able to perform. And, you know, just this pride of like, this was it. Like, this is something that we did together and we put forth and it was good.
Yeah.
And, there was just the emotion that goes with it. So there's my four, not groundbreaking. And a lot of people would have probably some qualms about them, but those are my thoughts.
I think what makes it cool is that especially with a few of those, there was a specific connection to them.
Yeah.
You know, why they were on your list. And you know, when you talk about Guys and Dolls, that production that you did, you know, I think anytime that you feel true ownership of something,
mm-hmm.
whenever that thing is done, there's no way to react other than that.
Yeah.
You know, like I always joke with my basketball players and my students, like, I don't think I've had a basketball season since I was a sophomore in high school where I didn't cry when it was done.
Oh yeah.
Cause it's just like, you put in all that time and you care about the people you're working with. And also it's that feeling that this is the end of this group being together.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
You know, and that's always emotional. And if it's emotional, it means it was really important.
Yeah. And I think that's this like, you know, that's another philosoph of like, oh, you know, crying. No, like crying, really, I tell my students and different people all the time, like crying shows you care. Like that's meaning like it was so important to you that you are moved at the end of it because you're sad. You're like grieving the loss of this unique experience.
Moment,
And so I think there's a lot of that in sports. And, you know, if you get to some of those big games of state and or even just big playoff games, like there's just the emotion that should be tied to it because you invested so much into those those moments to make them happen. So I think that's awesome. I think that it's a cool,
definitely
cool thing.
Let's talk a little bit about the musical, this year's musical.
Yep.
So how far are you into rehearsal?
We're about almost the halfway point between when we started and not, and it's usually a fall musical, but thankfully because of COVID we moved it. And I say thankfully because about right when we would have been having it was when the surge was happening in cases. So we would have, you know, it would have been interesting. So glad we moved it to the spring, March 19th and 20th. We're doing a production of a musical called Band Geeks, which is, I'm really surprised is not a more done musical in high schools. It was on Broadway and it actually, it's awesome. Like the music is so fun. Mm-hmm. But it's really relatable to high school students. It's about a marching band that's kind of dwindling. And then, this athletic jock who kind of got kicked out of football. He was a football star, but got kicked out cause he, put a guy in the hospital or something. And so then they have to come together and figure out that, you know, it's not just about, you know, it's kind of figuring out who they are. Some of that same stuff that you're talking about, in Wicked, but it's so relatable. There's moments that you just, it turns from this comedy, which it's hilarious. And there's going to be a lot of good moments, but to this like man, like these kids just want to matter, and they just want to matter to not only like their peers, but their parents and like some of that stuff. So I'm really excited. We have a rock star cast. We have a rock star people working on the set and stuff. So I think it's going to be definitely one that, that people are going to want to check out. And I'm super proud of the kids of what they've done so far. And we still have some time left to get it even better.
Definitely. That's great. Yeah. I think, you know, you alluded to some things that if you're doing a high school production, you've got to have something that can be funny, you know, because you want the kids to have fun with it. You've got to have something that they can relate to.
Yeah.
Because I can remember, like I told you, I did the spring plays. I can remember sometimes feeling like, oh, I don't know if we have a lot of connections to these characters, you know? And, if you're going to play that part, you want to feel that, you know, and then you got to have something that, obviously, you know, has a powerful message, because that's what's going to be important to not just kids, but the people who come watch, you know. And if you want those people to come watch and have it be more than just the parents, like what's it going to be, you know? And so I think that's cool that you picked a musical like this, and it'll be fun.
I'm excited. I do think that the people are going to enjoy watching it, and so it's going to be great.
Well, I walked by one day and Zoe Carter was performing some song, and I was like, she sounds great. So
we have some awesome talent here. Yeah. So that has nothing to do with me. That's all the kids. Like I'm not taking credit for anything, because the kids are really the ones that are doing some awesome work, and they're going to hopefully put together this awesome experience for people to enjoy as much as they do.
Definitely. So. Definitely. All right. So let's shift back to teaching a little bit.
Awesome.
If you didn't teach, what kind of career would you like to pursue? So that's not necessarily saying like go back to when you decided that, like, let's say like right now, if you were going to shift and do something else, what do you think it would be?
So that's funny that you asked. So that, actually recently, just in the past couple months, I love finances. And I don't mean like finances of like businesses and taxes and stuff, but I love like finances of individuals and couples and people and families of figuring out, hey, what smart choices that you should be making now with money to set yourself up for success later. So I actually got trained as a Dave Ramsey financial coach.
Yeah, my sister-in-law is all about that.
Oh my goodness.
She is like, whatever the levels are, she's like,
baby steps.
Yeah, she's through it all and has been for years. So,
I mean, it's crazy the things that we learned about and the things that you hear of, like, I mean, just how many people are just so in this hole of debt, but of also just like despair almost of like, hey, we're just never going to get out, when really there's some awesome steps you can take to put yourself in success and save money for retirement, save up for your kids' college fund. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of awesome things to be doing, and I love crunching the numbers and I love digging into that. So honestly, if I, you know, something happened today and I wasn't able to teach tomorrow, then I would definitely pursue something with that of teaching some of those principles and working with people to get a control of their finances and set themselves up, as Dave Ramsey says, you know, set themselves up to win with money.
Absolutely.
Know? So
financial advising in some capacity.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So have you followed all this stuff going on with Robin Hood and the Wall Street stock market? Oh
yep.
Man, my friends in our group chat are talking about it, and it is way above my pay grade. And so I'm trying to, I'm like, hey, give me the basketball coach, English teacher version of this.
The second grade version of what's happening.
Because my wife, she was a business student in college. She was the business student at Briarcliff. So she understands that way better, but pretty, so could you explain it to me in the most elementary version?
Okay. I'll do my best. So basically what happens is that the hedge funds, or the people that are running the big accounts, are basically, it's a betting game.
Yep.
They're betting that some of these stock market companies are going to decrease in value.
Sure.
So they basically, in a way, they are betting on that decrease to happen. Well, we don't need even the logistics of how they do that in shorts and stuff. But what happens then is that this Reddit user saw that they had bet a lot of money on GameStop decreasing
the place where I used to go buy video games.
Which, but I mean, if you look at GameStop, like, I nothing against GameStop, so don't sue me for this, but like, you can download a lot of those games now onto your Xbox or onto your store. No. Unfortunately for them, it's kind of moved away. So it's not, wasn't an unreasonable bet, but they found out. So then they were like, hey, let's buy, let's increase the value of GameStop. So when they did that, these people basically lost out on their bet, a lot of money. And I think it was to the point where it was like $13 billion.
So the internet won again.
The internet won. And so then there's been this huge movement. And I know like there was a thing that was like, oh, they were blocking transactions and stuff. I think it was really because they can't handle, like there were so many people wanting to buy, they couldn't handle the amount of transactions, they had to shut down. So it wasn't like they were trying to stop it, but it's kind of ironic, you know, that kind of happened. But it's a changing landscape for how the things work now with internet and whatnot.
The name Robin Hood is pretty ironic too.
Yeah, you know, I know, right?
That's what he would have stood for. But so the last question I always ask every guest, Brandon, is what's your why? Why do you teach?
Yeah, I think, and this is a conversation I have with the students at the beginning of the year. I sit them down and we have a real moment. I say, you know what? I'm not here to teach music. Like, I'm here because I want to spend time with you guys as students, and I'm here to teach life skills through music. Is kind of something that, and I know Jeff and I both kind of share this mentality of like, we want you to develop as a person. And I think there's a lot of things music can offer as far as getting to the skills that you need. But man, I care a lot more about you as a person and as you developing and being a kind person, a respectful person, somebody who's advocating for themselves and developing and growing and maturing way more than I care about you singing the best. Now, am I going to encourage you to also sing the best? But my why is I want to see these kids grow up to be awesome members of society who are leaders, not only in the community, but in their homes, leaders in all facets of their life. I want them to really just succeed. And I want to encourage there and be a mentor, a counselor, a supporter, biggest fan. I want to cheer them on. But I think that there's so much undervalue of the mm-hmm. of the youth today. I mean, that they can't, that, you know, they're too young, which there's a balance there too. But I mean, I think there's a lot of things that these students that they can do, and there's nothing they can't do, but they just need someone telling them that. And I think I want to be that person who's encouraging them and pushing them out of the corner back into the boxing ring to fight another round and to win. So I just think that there's nothing better. I mean, my grandpa always wanted me to be a doctor or go and defend the Constitution. And I think those are valuable things, but I think that there's a lot more reward. And I think you'd agree with this. There's a lot more reward that we get every day getting work with the kids. And I think there's a lot more times where it can certainly be down. Yep. You know what I mean? Like there's definitely moments where it's, oh my goodness, what did I do with my life? But then there's just so many more moments that are like, yeah, like, look at that. There's that kid that back in August couldn't sing a single note, but now we built up their confidence.
Yeah.
And now they're out there singing a solo. Like those are the moments that you can just see the kid lighting up. And that's my why. I want to see that in every kid.
Absolutely. Well said. And you're right. It's the small moments where it's worth it speak so much more than the down moments. So.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on the pod, Brandon.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Fun to have some of those. Yeah, we dug into some of those topics.
I think there were definitely some younger sibling psychology.
I should sit down. If any other younger siblings need to work through some problems, you just let Michael and I know. We can help you through. So.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for coming on, Brandon.
You bet. Have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Cadet Conversations and Coffee Podcast. I want to give a special shout out to junior Isabel Nicozzle, who created our awesome logo for the podcast, and freshman Val Hensley, who created all of our original music for the podcast. If you like what you hear, give us a like, follow, or subscription on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. See you next time.